everybody. Can you guys stand with us? My name is Brad. You guys are welcome to Crossroads. If it's your first time here, you are totally welcome. We're glad you're here. What we're about to do is sing songs as an act of worship to God. So if you guys would sing with us, that'd be great.
Who breaks the power of sin and darkness? Whose love is mighty and so much stronger? King of glory, the King above all kings. Who shakes the earth? Who shakes the whole earth with holy thunder? And leaves us breathless in awe and wonder. The King of glory, the King above all kings.
These things to be true, or we're putting our hope in those things, or that we're even just thinking about it. So as we sing this song, which is all about God's redemption and God's grace for us, sing it with knowing that He hears you and that He loves you.
Bless the Lord.
That you're not a God that just sits on a throne and casts His judgment upon us, but you're a God that sent His one and only Son to die in excruciating pain on a cross for our sins, and then also so that we could be connected to You. So that while we sing these songs, God, we know that You are listening, and we know that You are pleased with us. It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Well, hey guys, thank you so much for singing with us. Before you have a seat, why don't you turn to your neighbor and give him a high five. So this week we're starting our brand new series where we're going to venture to the other side of the world to get a glimpse of what an encounter with God might look like. Check this out.
Ancient books tell us of people going on epic adventures and encountering God, the actual God of the universe. And when they met him, everything changed. For 5 weeks, we're setting out on our own adventure, going halfway across the world to the places where these people supposedly met God. Do these places actually exist? Did this actually happen? And if we unearth those ancient places, what will we experience today? Come with us on an adventure to find relief, comfort, transformation, healing, and freedom. Let's find a real encounter with God.
Didn't know that.
Oh, hey there. It's great having you with us today at Crossroads, wherever you are, whatever site or a crossroads, anywhere you may be. My name is Brian, and I'm going to be leading us on an adventure. I'm going to be taking us to places where people have very rarely gone. You're going to see things, experience things that I'm hoping you get underneath. It's called Real Encounters with God. Not too long ago, I was on a motorcycle trip and I interacted with some guy who I had never known before that I met on this trip. He told me he was an atheist. And I started asking him why he was an atheist, and he said, I just don't feel God. I've never felt him. Which that was different for me, because so oftentimes atheists want to point to science is perhaps disproving God, which I don't see science ever doing that, but they want to point to science and facts and all that stuff. And I'm interacting more and more with people who are talking about, I just don't feel God. Well, I gotta tell you, man, I feel him very, very closely. And a lot of people feel him very, very closely. And I want you in this series to feel him very, very intimately and closely. And to do that, we're gonna go to places where close encounters, real encounters with God have happened. These are some of my favorite Bible stories. These are stories that have formed me. These are stories that have brought my imagination and creativity alive. This is the kind of stuff where I genuinely feel God. So we're gonna go over to Israel and we're gonna have a tour guide who's gonna take us around to places that very, very few people get to go to. He is a true bad donkey, this guy is. I'm telling you, he's former Israeli Special Forces. And not only that, he's a Bible scholar. He comes from an obvious long line of Jews, and his family is one of the earliest families who are Jewish in the nation of Israel, who actually looks to Jesus as Messiah. So we're going to have him lead us through things, and while he leads us through things, and we go to these places, Chuck Mingo, our campus pastor in Oakley, is also going to be interacting with people in our own community in the Cincinnati region who have had true encounters with God, who have felt God, who have been touched by him, who have been enriched by him, who have been brought to freedom, who have been brought to wholeness, who have been brought out of depression, who have been brought out of pain. We need to hear these stories because I know our stories are very similar to some of these, and we need to have a real encounter with God just like they have had a real encounter with God. So let's head on over to Israel and let's get our adventure started. The beginning of real encounters with God, and someone who's going to help us navigate some stuff that is high on his radar is our special great guide. Your name is Turiel.
Suriel.
Suriel. Why don't you tell us where we are right now? Thanks for taking the time. He's going to be with us throughout our whole journey, and let's just walk and tell us what we're doing, my friend.
Let's go. We're going to see now. It's a beautiful place to start with. I hope you left your gun and drinks back in the car, because it's not allowed to bring it inside.
My short shorts are right underneath here. I'm gonna strip down just so I can experience everything.
We are now almost 500 meters above sea level, which is something like 1,500 feet. And from here you can see big parts of, I would say, southern part of Galilee, of course, the coastal area. And down below us, this beautiful Jezreel Valley that goes all the way to the east, to the Jordan River eventually.
For people who are really into like end of the world kind of stuff, Bible prophecy, this is pretty significant right here.
It is. We speak about this valley, which is called Jezreel Valley, and it is known also as the Valley of Armageddon.
Armageddon. Ooh, I was afraid already.
There is a city, an ancient city called Megiddo, not far from here, down below us, and it was sitting and controlling a central road that was crossing the land of Israel from the west and then crossing Jezreel Valley up to the north and northeast, eventually towards Damascus. And Megiddo was a crucial point, strategic point that controlled that road. Now, the city itself, Megiddo, is sitting on top of a hill, and the hill in Hebrew, it's Har, and the name is Megiddo. So Har Megiddo, the city on the hill, and it became Armageddon. Okay, so the Valley of Armageddon, Har Megiddo down below us. And from here we can see, to that direction, we can see Nazareth, the hills over there. This is where Nazareth is. This is where Jesus grew up. Behind that, we see a nice round peak, which is Mount Tabor. And then we see another hill called Mount of Moreh. And then we see this nice opening where Gideon actually chose the 300 warriors, and Mount Gilboa, where King Saul was eventually killed, where the palace of King Ahab used to be. So we are surrounded with the Bible all
Bible
around.
History, yeah. All the way around here. And now the crazy thing is, all of this stuff here, all of this stuff, it's real. We're able to see it, we're able to study it. And so we're gonna have a lot of tangible, tactile proof of God's existence, because this stuff happened and it's still here, and we can follow in the great steps before us and having that real encounter with Him.
Right, one thing that I urge people is that the sooner you come here to the Middle East and to Israel and you see the things, you understand better things. And you say, wow, why didn't I go there 20 years ago? Because it helps us to see that the Bible is a real thing. You know, these are real people, it's real landscape, weather, wind, clouds, all the things that we read about like some kind of fairy tales, it's a real thing. People were here, and when you walk through these mountains, when you sense, you know, when you see the Sea of Galilee, when you see the wind, when you see people, suddenly the whole thing comes much more real, and you can relate also to your own life, I would say.
Unfortunately, most of us who are with us today are not going to be able to get all the way over here for time or financial restraints, but that's okay, because we're bringing it to you. We're going to enable you to have a real counter in a way that it could be very, very profound. So enough of the history. Let's start getting on with some adventure, because that's what we came here for.
I'm ready for that.
All right, chop, chop. So we're going to start with one of my favorite stories. It took place on Mount Carmel and the walk up to the top of Mount Carmel. This is in the Old Testament portion of the Bible, the book of 1 Kings 18. It's one of my favorite stories in the Bible. I've told the stories to my kids countless times when I was tucking them into bed. I've been at Crossroads for over 20 years. I probably preached on this story, I don't know, 3 times or so, which is a lot because I don't like to repeat a lot of things, maybe 4 times, something like that. So it's one of my favorite stories, but I'll tell you what I've never done. I've never actually talked about it where it actually took place. I've never actually walked in the footsteps of one of the great, great prophets of the Bible in the history of the world like we're going to do it. This is about encountering the presence of God. To do that, we're gonna have a little adventure. I'm gonna start my adventure right now. We all got some crackers when you came in. Let's just go ahead and open up those crackers, wherever you have. I happen to have Skyline crackers. And if you're Crossroads Anywhere, hopefully you've got your own crackers. If you're watching Crossroads Anywhere and you could have driven to a Crossroads site someplace, you stayed in your bathrobe instead of getting free crackers. Ha, 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 ha. So anyway, we have crackers for us. And let's just go ahead and let's eat those crackers. That's right. Do the whole thing while we're doing them. Do not wash them down with this. If you've got water or coffee, whatever you have, no. I want us to feel the story. I want us to feel it. I want us to feel what Elijah and the nation of Israel felt at that time. So let's finish them up. All right. All right, now you can do this. Come on now, come on. You can do this. You can go another 30 minutes without a drink. So no drink, you can suck it up for 30 minutes because other people have been through drought periods for a long, long time and have been way worse off than you are right now. So let's have this be part of our adventure and let's go head over right now and let's get to the scene of the amazing, powerful encounter with God that I'm hoping you have today.
First Kings 18, verse 36 through 46. At the time of the sacrifice, the prophet Elijah stepped forward and prayed, "Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known today that you are God in Israel and that I am your servant and have done all these things at your command. Answer me, Lord, answer me so these people will know that you, Lord, are God and that you are turning their hearts back again." Then the fire of the Lord fell and burned up the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, and the soil, and also licked up the water in the trench. When all the people saw this, they fell prostrate and cried, "The Lord, he is God! The Lord, he is God!" Then Elijah commanded them, "Seize the prophets of Baal. Don't let anyone get away." They seized them, and Elijah had them brought down to the Kishon Valley and slaughtered there. And Elijah said to Ahab, "Go, eat and drink, for there is the sound of a heavy rain." So Ahab went off to eat and drink, but Elijah climbed to the top of Carmel, bent down to the ground, and put his face between his knees. "Go and look toward the sea," he told his servant, and he went up and looked. "There's nothing there," he said. Seven times Elijah said, "Go back." The seventh time the servant reported, "A cloud as small as a man's hand is rising from the sea."
This story starts in drought conditions. And the reason there's a drought is because one of the great prophets of the Old Testament, Elijah, actually prays for drought. He prays for drought because the nation of Israel has gotten away from the one true God. Yahweh is his name, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They've gotten away from them. They're starting following a false god. His name is Baal. He's known, apparently, for fire, for thunder, for lightning, for rainstorms. And they're following this false god. And Elijah is so upset that you're following the wrong god. He prays that the rain would stop to get people's attention and to come back to the real God. Imagine how much Elijah would be hated in that day. He's the one who's responsible for the awful drought. In Cincinnati, there's an awful playoff drought. Somebody must have prayed for that thing, and whoever that person is, we hate them and damn them to hell. I don't know who that person is, but it's like, that person has messed us up. This is the way it would have been with Elijah. Right now, in the beautiful Mount Carmel, you could imagine all of this beautiful, lush valley as it is right now, brown, yellow, wiped out, no water for over 3 years. There would have been no vegetation on the ground. If there were any leaves on the trees, they would have been yellowed out. People would start to feel a bit desperate. They'd start to feel a level of anxiety, and they would have that anxiety towards this supposed man of God who follows apparently the one true God who is responsible for this. Now, Elijah is praying and has prayed for a drought according to the New Testament portion of the Bible because he wants to get people to God. In order to get people to God, he's gonna call for a showdown between his God, the one true God, Yahweh, and the false god of Baal. And in that showdown, he calls them out on the top of the mountain. And so that's what we're gonna do right now. And I've got a dry mouth, and I'm gonna have to go on a hike to the top of Mount Carmel in the same way that Elijah and anybody who wanted to see what was gonna happen had to go on a hike. So here we go. You get to sit where you are and not drink. I'm gonna have to work in the blistering heat of the Middle East and climb a mountain and a little bit carry water. Man, it's like walking to school uphill both ways in snow, right? Except it's gonna be hot and I'm walking all the way. So here we go. Let's go. Thank you.
So the central character in the story is Ahab. Not Captain Ahab. You're already fixating on water. That doesn't come for another couple thousand years. No, King Ahab. He is a nasty, awful king who's overseeing the people of Israel. Oh, gosh, those were heavy. I'll get into those in just a moment. Ahab is doing wrong by the one true God and by the people of God, the nation of Israel, in large part because he's got this wife who just is off a rocker. She has major, major, major issues. Her name is Jezebel. She's a massive control freak, and Ahab is weak enough to be controlled. And Elijah comes and says, we're going to find out what God is the real God. This Baal, who is supposed to be the God of fire, the God of thunder, the God of lightning, the God of storms, or Yahweh, the one true God of Israel, who has brought his people through the waters in generations past. We're going to have a showdown. We're going to have a competition. You get all of you prophets, all the false prophets of Baal. We're going to meet you and me, the one remaining true prophet of the one true God, Elijah himself. We're going to meet on top of Mount Carmel. We're going to get as close to the gods as possible. We'll find out who is the one true God. And people start following because they want to see exactly what happens. Yeah, that was a real climb up that hill. It took a long time, especially with a mount that's feeling the way ours is right now. Let's talk about why they had to get on that hill. Talk about what the significance of sacrifice. This seems so unclean and barbaric to us. Oh, you've got to, you know, kill something. This is really odd. We have a major elitism in our culture where we just feel our way is always the right way. And we don't appreciate other cultures in the world, and especially ancient cultures. They believed that the gods were out there, the gods were higher than them. That's why they would always go to a higher place. They wanted to get closer to the gods. And they recognized they had some major, major shortcomings in their life that would justify the wrath of the gods. And so the way they would satisfy that is they would put an animal out and kill that animal, and they would remember that I'm the one who should be losing my life, but this animal is instead. And this is the way it was for the nation of Israel. They understood God to be a very, very merciful God, but they wanted to remember that their God wasn't taking their life, and they wanted to have a concrete example that they should actually lose their life. Now, this false God of Baal, he wasn't a gracious God at all. So it's two totally different identities of God. And let's just go to see what took place in the showdown. It is beautiful up here. You have a really great scene of the Megiddo Valley, Armageddon, we talked about earlier. We're really fortunate today as well because we're filming this on the Jewish Sabbath. Normally, you've got fighter planes that are going over top regularly because there's a big airstrip down there. And I've heard stories about how many buried missiles there are there, all kind of stuff. But, you know, some people are really into that kind of thing. That doesn't really geek me out. What geeks me out is what's already happened, real history. This is about the air. We don't know exactly where it was. But I like to think this could have been the place where Elijah had a massive competition with the prophets of Baal because the people could have seen it. It's up on the mountain, like I said, and it is go time. It is competition time. I don't know about you, but I like competitions. This is a place where there is competition. First up in this corner, we have the prophets of Baal representing the false deity who's trying to steal the soul of Israel, and they get their altar, and they get a cow, and they chop it up, and they put wood on it, and then it's time to start calling on their gods. They start pacing. They're pacing around their altar. They're praying to the great God above. They believe he's there. He's actually not there, but they believe he is. Baal. And they're pacing as the day goes on. They're praying, and Elijah's just watching this. He says, Wow, where's your God? I don't know where he is, but maybe he's on vacation. And as he's taunting them in his competition, they start doing what they need to do to get their God's attention, or so they think. So that means they start cutting themselves, they start ripping their shirts. Ancient pagan religions would believe if you start cutting yourself, pouring ashes on yourself, pulling out your hair, doing something demonstrative, that the gods would hear and they would respond. So they start doing that, and while they do it, nothing is happening. And so Elijah starts pouring on. He's saying stuff like, maybe your God's taking a dump. Maybe he's relieving himself. It's actually in the original Hebrew. Maybe your God is just out to lunch somewhere. And as they're going around, as time goes on, they finally give up. They're done. And everyone has seen it. Everyone has seen it. Now it's Elijah's turn. A man of competition, and he notices in this area is an old altar. It's been broken down. Why is it broken down? It's because the nation of Israel haven't been using it because they stopped following the one true God. And so he sees the shrapnel, he starts putting it together. There's 12 stones, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's 12 stones, 9, 10, representing the 12 tribes of the nation of Israel. So he rebuilds this altar. He brings the calf up, or the cow up. They have it sliced and diced, and it's skewered all over the place. And then they find some wood, make sure the wood is all on in around the thing. And people are like, oh my gosh, this is gonna be awesome. He's gonna call down his God. And then he does something else. He goes, hey folks, I'm gonna need some water now. They're going, water? Yeah, this is why I've humped that water all the way up this freaking mountain. He says, I'm gonna need some water now. Now, this is a real interesting test for them because they're in drought. There's no babbling brooks around here for them to get water from. So guess what they gotta do? They gotta bring their own water. They gotta tap into their own personal water supply. This is an act of faith for them. They are getting engaged in the miracle of God. I'll tell you what. God doesn't just do things and we passively receive. He does do that. He can do that. But oftentimes there are miracles that God does through the movement and through the sacrifice of his people. And his people have a hand, at least the faithful ones. You can imagine how difficult it would be to bring your water, thinking, my water, this is precious to me. I haven't had water for a while. What am I supposed to do with this water? Just bring it up here, bring it up here. So they bring these 12 big old containers of water. How they hump them up here, I have no idea. They get these 12 containers of water over time, and Elijah takes one, and he pours it out. Oh, forgot. He actually knew what was gonna happen here. He knew it was gonna happen, he had a sense. And so he happened to have a shovel nearby, and he digs a trench around it. And this trench would have been somewhat normal because as you would kill an animal, the blood would trickle down into that trench. So he takes and he builds a trench all the way around it. Man, I haven't done this since I was a grunt laborer in college. Anyone got any safety goggles? All the safety people out there going, he's doing that without goggles. He should have ear protection too. Yes, he actually builds a trench all the way around. Now we would be here all day and you wouldn't have time to wait for all this. Interesting, fascinating how this stuff is so dusty. This is how the ground would have been. He comes around with this trench all the way around. And then they're ready. They bring me some of that water. Takes it and he pours out. You can sense people going, oh, wait, whoa, you said bring water. What is this? In fact, they're going, not only is this a bummer, you're wasting my water, but you're asking God to call down fire. That's the competition. Whoever God answers first with fire, and guess what? Water and fire aren't supposed to mix. Why would you do this? He starts pouring out water. Right now, I'd kind of like to drink that water. You ever been dry? I don't know, maybe you're dry right now.
We all go through dry periods. I'm praying for you in the midst of this series that if you're dry, you start to feel the moisture of God, just like these rocks and just like this carcass and this wood was feeling this moisture. We're working for you to feel the moisture and the water of God.
Hey guys, this is going to be an awesome series, as I bet you can already tell. We're all getting outside of our usual environments to try to have real encounters with God. And I actually had an awesome real encounter with God this past weekend. I got out of my normal environment and I went to Lebanon Correctional Institute. It's a prison in Ohio. I don't know if you know this, but Crossroads Anywhere is actually in three prisons in Ohio. An incredible teammates here. And I get to spend all day on Sunday, about 40 or 50 men, absolutely just one of the best times I've ever had. And I get to encounter God in a brand new environment and in a brand new way. We saw one guy actually start a relationship with Jesus for the very first time. At the end of the day, after incredible conversations about what it looks like to be a man, we actually had the privilege of baptizing seven of these guys. And the celebration, just an incredible opportunity. And this whole series is all about taking those steps to get out of our usual environments and have these real encounters with God. One of the great ways that you can do this is to join a group. All of our actual activity that's done in prisons is led and organized by a group of people. And many of these groups that you can find online at crossroads.net/groups have these missions, have these purposes to them. And you can go there, you can search, you might be able to find a group in your neighborhood. You might be able to find a group that shares a similar interest or passion that you have. We even have online groups. So if there's not a physical group in your neighborhood or you need a more convenient time, you can meet with people online through Google Hangout. We just started a group that meets on Thursday nights for anyone who's interested in hosting a Crossroads Anywhere experience in their house. So this looks like people who just want their friends, their family, their coworkers to come with them and experience Crossroads together. On Thursday night, we have an online group that you can join where you can hear inspirational stories from all over the country, where you can get some training and equipping on how to do that really well and some support network for what that looks like. You can grow together, which is really, really exciting. So go to crossroads.net/groups. Take the risk, search, and join a group today. The other thing you can do to get out of your comfort zone is to go somewhere. So I went somewhere today. I didn't have to go very far, but one far place you could go to this coming year is South Africa. We're taking an anywhere team from all over the country to South Africa this year, and I would love for you to come with me and enjoy that. We're going to serve a community of people, and my expectation is we're going to encounter God in a totally new way there as we do. You can go to crossroadsgo.net. Learn more about that trip and all of the trips we do. You can go to India, you can go to New Orleans. There's all kinds of local surfing opportunities we're really excited about. We're gonna have a time to be generous as we continue in our service today. We do this every week. There's a team of people around here who fund all of these experiences, all the technology we get to use, all the ways that we sort of leverage and all these new environments where we can experience God together. If you wanna be a part of that team, we'd love to have you. My wife and I set up a reoccurring gift at crossroads.net/give. We give every week. It's an incredible privilege of ours. You can experiment with one-time giving. And if you're brand new, I would just tell you, there's zero expectation to do this. We're just glad that you're here, and we hope you encounter God in a brand new, fresh way. As we give, we're gonna continue on in our service and learn more about what it looks like to have a real encounter with God.
There's a lot of people in the community of Crossroads who had incredibly close encounters with God. One of them is named Allison. She's been on Crossroads for over 10 years, and she actually went through a major, major dry spell where God met her in a unique place. She's a wife, she's a mom, she's a professional copywriter, and she's got a story about how she felt God and had an encounter with Him. And let's go to her and Chuck as they fill us in.
So Allison, we are standing in this place. It's nice, it's a sunny day, but we're not just here because it's a nice sunny day and it was a good day to be outside. We're here because you had a real encounter with God in this very place.
I did.
Why don't you tell us about that?
So I was walking up and down this hill, which I do sometimes for exercise, and I was in a really dry place. My husband and I kept asking God for another child, and nothing was happening. We'd been praying for 2 years really consistently, and I can't say that I've been really consistent about praying for anything as much as we've been consistent about that. We literally drew a circle that said baby in it, and I had our two daughters color in, you know, and they were 3 and 5 at the time, color in the circles, and we prayed with them every day, and so their prayer was that God would give us a baby brother or baby sister.
So what was the desire? Why do you think you had the desire for this third child?
I think God put it in my heart. It's not something that I wanted my whole life with 3 kids. It was something that I feel like God put on my heart, which then made it harder when it wasn't happening. And then I had a miscarriage, and my husband was out of the country. And so that was the first one. And then I had another one, and he was also out of the country. But this time, I had to have emergency surgery. And so it was hard because we weren't together at the time. It was hard because we then had lost 2, and we were almost 40, and we were starting to wonder if it was ever going to happen.
How are you feeling toward God as you were pleading?
I was mad. I was mad. I was sad. I was weary. I was angry at him for not saving my other 2 babies, and for not, it didn't feel like he was showing up for me.
Yeah.
And so when I started hearing from him here so quickly, it surprised me because I had been dry for so long.
I'm sure you felt like that before if you don't feel like it right now. It is tough when you're feeling dry and you're feeling weary and things just aren't going your way. That's why we have doubts about God, because we're not feeling God in the midst of those places. But really, what happens is through those places, we can experience God with more power and more potency on the other side. This is where Elijah and the nation of Israel are in this story. So let's get back and let's see if some good news happens.
Three times, 4 containers, a lot bigger than these, 3 times. It's hard to get open. Hold on. There we go. That's one. He says, okay, before I start, I need some more water. More, my gosh, they go get some more water. I said, okay, that's it. He said, okay, before I pray, I need it again. Bring me another 4. Gosh, you can just imagine. People are going, oh, my water. How's it feeling right now? By the way, don't be drinking yet. You still got crackers in your mouth. How's that feel? Like, yeah, more. I want more water. Start bringing out more water. And there is so much. It's falling down all over the wood, all over the cab, down, making a trench in the water, except there's way, way more. And everyone's going, oh my gosh, now what? Wasted all of our water. And you're gonna ask for fire? This is a competition to see whose God is really God? You can almost sense how palpable the tension is in the air, up on this mountain, down the valley, as people watch this huge altar, whatever, much bit larger than this. And then Elijah goes into competition mode. But he does it very simple. He doesn't need to dance around an altar. He doesn't need to start cutting himself or ripping out his clothing. He says something very simple. He says, Yahweh, listen to your servant. May your people know, all these people know, that you are Yahweh, God, that you are the real and personal God. He says it once. It's almost like he mutters it, no theatrics. And all of a sudden, fire comes down from the sky. It comes down, bam, and it's unmistakable. It licks up the calf. It licks up the wood. It licks up the water. Even the very rocks themselves are detonated and blown into nothingness. The ultimate God, Yahweh himself, he has encountered. Everyone's encountering the real God. They're encountering his power. They're encountering his presence. Boom, it's gone. Everyone knows he is the one true God. The dust hasn't even settled yet, or the water hasn't even been completely gone yet. And Elijah says, okay, we're not done yet. We're not done.
All those people have been leading you to the wrong God. All those people who are pretending to be spiritual, they were acting spiritual. I'll tell you something. There's a lot of people who are into spirituality, but they don't know God. There's a lot of people who are into spiritual practices, have spiritual principles, they even act spiritual. You can act incredibly spiritual. You can even do spiritual things. But that is not the same as having an encounter with the real God who does real things beyond what your form of mysticism or spirituality may be. Don't be deluded by people who seem to have mystical spiritual abilities who don't know the true God. I'll tell you, they're dry. They're dry and they'll get you nowhere. What you and I need is a real encounter with the real Yahweh. And there needs to be justice for these folks that have led all of God's people astray. So Elijah said, get them all, kill them right now, kill them. Now we say, oh, why would you do that? Look, this is major spiritual competition. This is spiritual warfare. These people have hurt everybody. They hurt an entire nation. And God wants justice for people who profaned him. And they are gone, eliminated. And everyone knows you, Yahweh, you are the one true God. All right, let's hit the pause button right there. Because what you heard was pretty harsh. Because it is pretty harsh. Why in the world would a man of God, Elijah, put to death prophets who had led people astray? We have to understand, this is not a need for you and I to be violent towards someone who's disagreeing with us. This is a different mode that God is in right now. This is his chosen people who have been hurt, who have been killed, who have been made to suffer at the hands of a false God and people who are leading people away. And for there to be a real God, there has to be real justice. And my God is not against justice being enacted in his way, in his time. And he is a rough God. He can be very, very rough. And this is one of the situations in the Bible where we see him being rough, and it's out of loving his people and wanting to protect them. Because if these people stay around, one, he's not just, and two, they could lead them all astray again. So we see some extreme justice come at the hand of an extreme God. Yes, if you want to feel God, if you want to encounter with God, you have to get comfortable with some of the extremism of the one true God. There's a problem. There's moisture in the ground, but there's not moisture in the air. There's not moisture in the trees. There's not moisture in their mouths. So now he's got to do another miracle. He's got to do the miracle of producing rain. Getting fire is one thing, but getting rain is another. So now he has to go and he's got to pray. He actually prays, and it says he gets down and he puts his head between his knees, which tells me he's prostrate like this, in a humble position before God, saying, God, I am lower than you. I am beneath you. And he's praying for rain. He's praying, and after he gets done praying, he's got a servant who's up a little bit higher than he is, and he says, hey, you see any clouds coming? He goes back down. He's praying. Anything yet? Please tell me there's clouds up there. Is Yahweh my God answered with a yes yet? And there's rain. And there's moisture right now. Whatever you got a coffee cup, got your water, go ahead, drink it right now. Drink it, take it in right now. This is a physical representation of what your God wants you to have. Sometimes we go through dry periods and we haven't done anything to bring it on ourselves. Sometimes we do bring it on ourselves. Sometimes there's just things going in the spiritual realm that we can't fully understand. But you need to know right now, God wants you to have your thirst quenched. And the way that happens is for you to have a real relationship, a real encounter with the real God, Yahweh himself. When we hear someone talking about being talked to from God Himself, we sometimes have a hard time understanding that. Most of the time, if not all the time, when someone says, "I heard God say," they're not referring to an audible voice that they heard and could record and other people could also verify. It's often in the form of, "Oh my gosh, I just had a thought. I would not have generated that thought myself." Or it's a word that comes into your mind and it sticks in your mind and you go, "What? Why is that word there?" It just that, and as you think about it, you think that just seems to be a word that God would generate and God would approve. Or, as Allison talks, a picture, or there's like a thought in your mind, a vivid portrait that comes in your mind that's not unlike your normal imagination, but you didn't do anything to pre-think that, and it comes to you and it startles you to the point where you're left to think, as Allison concludes, God has put this here. Oftentimes God's speaking to us and we don't even recognize He's actually speaking to us.
I didn't care what it was, honestly. I needed to know something. So I started walking this hill.
Because that's a place for you kind of to pray and process.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
mm-hmm. So I started walking and I was basically begging to hear something. You have to tell me something loudly and clearly and right now because I don't know what to do anymore. And God just started talking. I felt like the faucet had been off and it just suddenly turned on.
Yeah.
And from that point on, it didn't stop.
Wow. And talk about that. So when you say the faucet turned on, you didn't hear an audible voice, or did you? Did you hear an audible voice in this moment?
No, it was more, it sounded like my voice, mm-hmm. but it was, you know, telling me things that I would not have thought of. Mm-hmm. And one of them was not an answer to anything I'd been asking. He just started to affirm me as a mom because I was starting to doubt whether or not I was worthy of being a mom mm-hmm. after a couple of years of trying. Maybe that was the reason I wasn't having a baby in my mind. And that stuck with me. And then he showed me this picture, and that was the most powerful thing, of a baby girl being handed to me. And he kept saying, "She's yours, she's yours." And I wanted very badly to believe that. And so I kept just walking right around here saying, "Really? Are you sure? Are you sure?" It made me feel peaceful. Like I knew that that's the one thing, the only way I can describe when I know it's God is like, okay, I know it's from Him.
Mm-hmm. And you're settled in that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you leave this hill. And what happens next?
Well, I told my husband about what I had experienced, and we just that week started talking about maybe we should consider adoption at this point because things had not been going well for us otherwise. And within 2 months, we had a baby.
Are you serious? Wait a second. I've heard adoptions take years or multiple years.
They usually do. We had gotten connected to a woman who knew a birth couple, and they chose us a couple weeks after I had this picture
wow.
given to me.
Wow.
And then within 2 months of standing here and hearing from God, she was born.
Unbelievable. And so they chose you, and you knew you still had to go through the adoption process. And one of the things you knew is that it's pretty expensive and you didn't have the money for it.
No. We said yes, knowing we didn't have a bank account set aside to pay for something like this. And so we had to ask for help. So we went to our friends and our family and our community. We sent in a letter, we sent in an email, and we told the story. And we said, "We need your help because we want her to be part of our family." And within 2 weeks, we had $20,000 to cover all of the adoption expenses and the attorney's fees and everything that goes with it.
Wow, wow.
You know, God spoke to me right here. I mean, I felt like it was a conversation between the two of us, but He didn't stop because the amount of people that surrounded us in that time, that's what I meant when I said that I felt like the faucet turned on, because he was talking to me, and all these other people around me were building into us too.
So how did this encounter change your relationship with God?
It made me feel really small, and I mean that in the best way possible. It just made me realize the magnitude of what He's capable of. What I feel like is He gave us a baby. He literally gave us a baby. And that if He can do that, what could He not do? And it made me feel loved and comforted, like literally like I fit in the palm of His hand, and he could just take care of me. And I felt more cared for and more loved in that period of time and since then, and more confident in that than I ever had.
Ah! the rivers of your love rise up. Let the sea overtake. Let the power from heaven rain down. We're thirsty. Let the rivers of your love rise up. Let the sea overtake. Let the power from heaven rain down. We're thirsty. Let the rivers of your love rise up. Let the sea overtake. Let the power from heaven rain down. We're thirsty. Let the rivers of your love rise up. Let the sea overtake. Let the power from heaven rain down. Let the dam break.
What God wants to be for you and in you. God can bring the fire. He just brought the fire, right? He can bring power in that way when he needs to. But the big idea of this story is that the biggest miracle isn't about the fire. The biggest miracle is about the water. It's about the rain. It's really odd to me that it seems like the more religious you are, the more into the fire of God you are, the more into the judgment of God you are, the more you want people to be smitten who don't think like you do or don't do the things that you do. You just like seem to be constantly angry. Aren't religious people like that? I knew when I was really deep in religion, that's the way I was. I just wanted God to go ahead and smite people, to lightning strike people who weren't like me, and who, of course, if you're not like me, then you're wrong. It's not just religious people. It's our entire country. It's the political process. That's what we're hearing right now. With the election, isn't it? Man, that other side, man, we need to get them done. That person's an awful person. They need to be eliminated. The people who are like that or this way or that way, it doesn't matter, conservative, liberal, whatever the spectrum, we're always wanting fire to come on the other people who are less than mortal life forms. The greatest miracle and the thing God does is he brings water. Even the disciples were prone to want fire. One day they're passing through Samaria. Samaria was a region where people they looked down on and judged because they were ethnically different than them. They didn't like them. And the disciples said to Jesus, "Hey, do you want us to call down lightning and fire right now? Let's just eliminate these people." And Jesus would have no part of it. Jesus had a big piece of this story that he personally owned because in Nazareth, which is over there, he would see this mountain, and he knew the scriptures very, very well, and he knew this is the place where fire and rain took place. Ooh, sounds like a James Taylor song. He knew this is the place where fire and rain took place, and he had a propensity for the rain more than the fire. He wanted to bring moisture. In fact, one time he's interacting with a Samaritan woman, a woman at the well where there is water, and he says to her, "Would you like the kind of water that I can give you so that you will never thirst again? The kind of water that will quench your thirst." He says, you come to me. Another time he says, come unto me all who are weary and heavy burdened, and I will give you rest. Another way to say that is, I will give you moisture. God will bring the fire. Sometimes it has to happen. Boy, and the core identity of Jesus, when you have a real encounter with him, the core identity is one of water, one of moisture. You may be dry right now. Maybe you're relationally dry. Maybe you're physically dry. You're worn out physically. Maybe you're emotionally dry. Maybe your marriage is dry. Maybe you are spiritually dry. You're in this series right now because you don't sense God at all. You're at the end of your rope. You're at the end of your moisture, and you think that that's a reason for the proof of the non-existence for God. Because if God was real, how come I'm not encountering him right now? How come I don't feel better than I do right now? Well, we're going to hope and pray that you do feel better this series, because you're going to meet the real God. You're going to have a real encounter with him. You're going to have some sense of the spiritual, of an encounter with him that's going to meet you at your deepest place. This is the real God. Baal was known as the one who could bring fire, the one who could bring rain. He never did. But the real God, the God who is noble, not this ethereal spiritual entity, no, a personal God, the God Yahweh, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He's real. He's real. He's noble. You can have a relationship with him. And we're going to pray that you get to have a personal, deep, soul-satisfying, quenching relationship with him. If not right now, then sometime in this series. Let me pray for you. God, I thank you for everyone who you brought to this place today, either on the web or in a Crossroads site. And I thank you that you've spoken to us where we are. Some of us have encountered you in a real way right now, or we're going to over the next few weeks. So God, hear the pleas of dry people who want your moisture. Rain on us, God. Rain, give us your moisture. And thank you for already starting it today. I pray these things according to the character of Jesus, the one who brings rain. Amen.
The series is going to continue to be incredible. We have some phenomenal weekends coming up, and I just wonder who in your world needs to be with you while you're experiencing these things over these next couple weekends. Next weekend is going to be about comfort. And all of us have people in our life who, if we just thought for a couple of seconds, we go like, oh yeah, these people would be deeply encouraged hearing a message about comfort and knowing a God who comforts, encountering a real God that would comfort them in whatever situation they're in. So share this series with people, invite people to attend with you, find a way to make that happen. I think if you asked, you'd be surprised how many people are going to take you up on the offer. And after every weekend, the on-demand version of the series is, or of every service, is going to be available online. So go online, grab that video, share it with your friends, make sure as many people as possible get exposed to this. We want as many people as possible to have a real encounter with God. We think this is really good news. And so if this has been good news to you, would you just share it with as many people as you can? I'm excited about this series. I'm excited to see you next week. Have a great week.